G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning to you, Daniel Harford. How are you?
I'm going well. Good. We had a winner on the early mail. We're good. Back on track. Life is good.
Yeah, we're only about 6 weeks behind where we need to be with the early mail.
No, we're not. We're still in front. Where's the spreadsheet? Still in front.
I think we might be, but...
No, I'm telling you, we are.
I still haven't seen that spreadsheet, but I still think that Dan O'Sullivan's been very good to us over the time. He is a Hall of Famer of the past, but he was very confident yesterday, and I must confess, when he sort of shared his confidence with us, I checked the odds thinking that the horse was going to be around about sort of $2.80, $3. I was quite shocked when it was $7.50. And sure enough, it won. So it was very good. Very, very good. Very pleased.
It's a bloody good run. I was a bit concerned there at one stage. Thought we were going to get held up and just be one of those certainties beat. But got a little gap there late and went whooshka. I'll be following that horse.
Yes.
Particularly at Flemington.
Yeah.
I think it's going to sit for the Matriarch the last day of the carnival. So Dan said post-race, I will be following that horse. I think that is a very, very good horse. In good form, too. So well done to Dan. And it got us off the three-week drought, which or maybe even four-week, coming up four-week drought on the early mail, which is great news for everyone.
No, it was very good news. A very funny thing happened yesterday. Over the last couple of days, my two boys decided that they were going to do a left footer's best 22.
Oh, yes.
And the reason it sort of started was because Campbell, who is 8, James is 5, Campbell is a left footer. And he's trying to work out who he's like as a footballer, because they're playing all these matches out in the backyard. So they did their team, and they were very happy with their team, and they had quite a few left over, so they decided that they would do a second team. And so I put the team on Twitter to see what people thought and who they'd missed, because they were adamant that they hadn't missed anybody. And sure enough, they forgot quite a few. So they did another team with the added players that were suggested, and we put that up. We remembered everybody, and then they forgot more people again. And it just kept going, and it was really interesting. We were talking about the All-Australian, how players can just be forgotten. So they felt like they were All-Australian squad selectors yesterday getting criticised for the players that they kept forgetting. So it was quite an interesting process for the two kids just getting rattled by all the players that they forgot. So it was an interesting exercise.
I'll cop 8 and 5-year-olds forgetting because they haven't got the data in front of them. But, I don't think Daniel Horne was there yesterday for the left footers selection meeting.
No.
Like what he would have been for the All-Australian meeting.
No, but that's exactly right. But but the kids, just seeing them get rattled when they thought they had their team right, and then all of a sudden, you forgot Norton. Oh, yeah. You forgot Danaher. Oh, yeah. And then they get round, they go through their notes, and they...
I forgot Danaher for a reason. He hasn't played enough footy to qualify for the left footers team.
Well, that was what their argument was, because they didn't have Dyson Heppel either. But that was a very funny day.
Hasn't played enough footy. Oh, I think they're on the money.
Yeah.
You've got to qualify for those teams.
I don't know about you, but I'm starting to get over this lockdown. It's starting to get a bit tenuous. And yesterday was they were cooking damper with their mum. They were selecting left-footed best 22s. They were playing balloon tennis. And then they had a large stint outside in the rain playing football because they thought that was good.
Perfect.
James tried to take a screamer on a pot plant, and the pot plant gave way and he landed on his head on the pavement.
Well, he won't do that.
So it was all happening yesterday, I tell you.
Sounds like an active day. That's good. Speaking of the second 22 left footers team, there is a... It's a nice little segue, actually. There is a... Wow. It's a... At this stage, a very primitive conversation about, you know, how the NBA, they have an All-NBA first team, an All-NBA second team,
yep,
an All-NBA third team, that instead of having a 40-man squad, and then you pick your 22 from that. But there is an All-Australian second 22, as opposed to just the first 22.
Yeah.
So there's two teams. So you either in the All-Australian first team or the All-Australian second team.
Yeah.
Is there any merit to that, do you reckon? In fact, I'll throw this open off the SMS too, 0416 90 50 52. Would you like a level of acknowledgement given to players who perhaps aren't picked in the final 22? Should they be in not just the squad, but the All-Australian second 22? Is that something we should introduce into the award season of Australian rules football?
Yeah, well, this is exactly what we're talking about. That's what they did with the left footers. They were the ones that were left over. They turned into a secondary team. So it's like Australia versus Australia A. I don't like it. I don't think that they should be. I understand why they had a squad of 40. That was the chance to recognise people. But then, rather than recognise the 40, it immediately goes to the players that weren't in the 40, that should have been in the 40. Now, we talked, you know, earlier in the week about no Stephen May. That was an oversight. No Todd Goldstein. That was an oversight. I mentioned Darcy Gardner. I thought he should have been in there. So I don't see the point in it. I think what they should do is at the end of every year, and I know they do this in Western Australia, or at least they used to, is actually name a state of origin team for each state. I would like to see them do that, so that when you have your honours at the end of the year, at the end of your career, you might be a 6-time All-Australian, 8-time Victorian State of Origin representative. Now, you don't have to play, but you actually get a framed jumper, and that actually goes onto your resume. I'd like to see that. That will see more people recognised for their seasons.
Yeah, okay. I think I've come across that thing in WA if they do that. That's not bad. That's not a bad way to do it. I would prefer that than seeing, I must admit, on the resumes at the end of careers and during their careers, seeing a Glendinning medalist or a some other medalist when in round 7 of a season, say it's Fitzroy taking on University and they play for the medal and someone gets a medal, it becomes part of their resume. Like you play well during a home and away season and you get, it's on your resume forever. Oh, come on. Come on. You've got to do more than that to get something on your resume than have one good day. I'm not sure. Not sure I like that business.
See,
so maybe that's,
so
maybe that's the way to go around it.
How many times did you play for Victoria?
No, just the once for me.
But that's something that you hold very dear to your heart, that you represented Victoria.
My word.
So while you played, you know, Scott Pendlebury's played a couple of times, maybe, or just once. I'm not sure whether he played in that that sort of anniversary game.
He played the one at the MCG, and he would have, did he play last this year, the bushfire one?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I can't remember.
You played like
that bushfire game seems like about 5 years ago.
I know. I was thinking that the other day. Somebody brought it up before. That must have been 2 years ago. Start of the year.
But I think it's about. Yes, it would be great to play, but if you were recognised, as I said, as a 7-time Victorian State of Origin player, I feel that that has a bit of weight to it, that it's a recognition of your best and fairest, you're all Australians, that sort of thing. It's a recognition for your year, that year. And it's, you know, you're named in the best 22 Victorian State of Origin players for that particular season. I think that carries weight.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Why do we need to name 40? Just name the team off the SMS.
Yeah.
Well, it's conversation. That's all it is. It's purely conversation starter.
Yeah, it is.
Keeps
it
you in
is.
The news. Keeps you a chance to get emotional about things and fire off things on social media and get clicks and likes and all that sort of stuff. That's why they do that. Whitey had the pockets for dinner last night. Terrible. Especially when they split because you put too much meat in. All out of whack. All out of whack. Put too much meat in. That's not the pockets' fault. That's your fault. Don't go blaming the pockets for putting too much meat in. What's going on, man?
Well, the discussion did sort of continue on after the radio show yesterday about these pockets, and I think it's clear that the meat and the salad items need to be premixed.
Yeah,
that's the whole key to it all.
No doubt.
Now whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's just the reality of the pockets because they're deep pockets, and you need to premix, and then you're away and running.
I know a few people with deep pockets. Short hands, too. Short arms. Short arms. Very deep pockets. What about, speaking of short pockets and long arms, the punter, remember we were talking to Trent yesterday about the punter who backed the Lakers to win game three of the NBA Western Conference Finals?
Yes.
Just had the, I think it was, two, it was like 220 or 260 thou on. Turns out that Denver won that game. Wonder how that punter's feeling according to this SMS. Feeling the same as getting a haircut from Cindy, which is not ideal. Now, my theory is that whilst poor old Cindy's got a little drive-by there, my theory is if you've got 260 to be thrown on a basketball game, you're probably not too stressed about it. Probably annoyed, but not too stressed about it.
There's also a story that came out during the week about the group of six or eight mates that put in either $1 each or $2 each, and they have an NFL multi on all games. And it's like they have a variety of things about, you know, passing completions and touchdowns and whatever else. And in the last leg, they needed a guy from New Orleans to catch a touchdown. And it was, they turned $12 or something into 200 and something thousand.
Oh, wow.
And the six of them, and they do it every week. They put in either $1 or $2 and they have these multis. And these guys got it, finally got it after a couple of years of trying. It was quite interesting. And it was quite a good touchdown. It was like a 7 or 8 metre pass, and he's caught it under pressure, and bang, there you go. It happened in the second quarter. It had to happen at any point through the match. It was the last leg. And they nailed it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Would look good in the spreadsheet, that. Don't you worry about that.
It would.
Investment for 220.
Now we'll talk to Brad Johnson about this a little bit later on, and we'll clearly talk to Adam Ramanaskis about this tomorrow.
Yes.
But the Ben Brown scenario and North Melbourne's decision to come out with a press release and say, we are no longer in love and it's time to see other people.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
I must admit, I don't see the point in advertising to the football world that you don't like this player anymore. For two reasons. One, that player has been very vocal in his love for your football club. So there's that element of it. And that's sort of, for a lot of people, that would be by the by. But the second one is, surely you lose all leverage. All leverage at all, but for anyone. If you're trying to get something in return for Ben Brown. Because he can just... Now you would think, if someone wants Ben Brown, they could just walk him through to the pre-season. And he could walk away from the North Melbourne Football Club for free. Because they have told everyone, well, we don't want him. He's not necessary, not required. We don't want him. So I was really surprised that it was that black and white from... Pardon the pun, even though it's royal blue and white from the Kangaroos yesterday. I didn't understand why they would do that.
No, I don't either. And I can understand why they have fallen out of love with Ben Brown from the point of view of that clearly the game style that they want to go with next year doesn't suit the Ben Brown type of player.
Yeah.
Now, under those circumstances, you go, well, and I'll go through the stats when we get Jono up after seven. You go, well, you know what? Look, Ben, you're a particular type of player. We think that it's probably in your best interest that you perhaps go and play footy somewhere else. We'd still like to keep you, and here's a deal to keep you. But if you sort of see what we see, it might be a situation where we could get someone else, or we could get a draft pick, and you could go somewhere. We'll try and make that happen. But to come out straight away and just say the bloke that's kicked 196 goals over the last 4 years is now just, we don't want him, and he's sort of anyone's, that's just completely devaluing what he's worth. And so all of a sudden, a buyer's market becomes a selling market almost, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you could forget, I reckon you just write off 2020 for Ben. He's clearly had some knee injuries and concerns, and the way they've played has been a disaster. So he played 9 games for this year for 8 goals. The previous 3 years, 64, 61, 63, that's 188 goals in 3 seasons.
Yep.
That's more than anyone in that period of time.
Yeah, we'll just I've got some good stats. We'll just keep
right,
them
okay,
for our sleeve.
Powder dry,
but,
powder dry.
Because I'm interested in what Brad Johnson says. But I think as a general situation, the tactic from North Melbourne, there's two parts to it. One is that they don't want a bloke, as you said, who's kicked 196 goals over the last 4 years. That's a bit odd in itself. But again, if they're changing their game style, okay, fair enough. But to come out, and it's almost like they wanted to make sure that it's on its terms, that we don't want him anymore. It's almost like putting him out on the front nature strip with a television that doesn't work anymore and a banana lounge and a couple of other things. And sort of like, well, if you want to take it, or the council will pick it up and take it away.
Yeah, I don't think the council will be required for Ben. I think someone will come and pick him up. David King on AFL 360 had some feedback for your mate yesterday about the Ben Brown contract. Ramo copped a bit of a drive-by. Let's have a listen to Kingy.
I'm not sure whether Ben's got this totally wrong or his management group have got this wrong, but I don't know, and I'm happy for you to answer this question, how you can have a contract that has 3 years on it, somewhere between $2.3 and $2.4 million attached to it for that period, and get to the end of the year and have nothing in front of you, and now looking for another club. So something's gone wrong here. Either he's had a really bad read at what the Kangaroos put in front of him, or he got simply out of alignment with what the rest of the AFL community are earning. But to be in this situation, I think, is a disaster on all fronts, for Ben personally and for the group that's managing him.
Your mate copying a little bit of feedback there. It's a fair point. It's a fair point from Kingy last night in regards to like a three-year deal at 700 or whatever it was, plus for Ben. They pushed for the fourth year. Didn't get it from the Kangaroos, and all of a sudden, 6 months later, or 9 months later, there's nothing. That's a very unusual situation. Most unusual situation.
It is. Now, yeah, look, from what I understand the situation, it was a scenario where it wasn't a money issue with Ben Brown and North Melbourne when they were sort of trying to negotiate a new contract. It was the length of term. Yeah. So it wasn't so much a money scenario. And the conversations went south after the break. So game one this year, there was the 2-3 month break, whatever it was. And then North Melbourne, you know, clearly through that time came up with a way that they wanted to play, which didn't suit the tall leading forward. So that's where it all changed. And then North Melbourne are going, well, if that's the case, we don't really want to be paying a player and giving them a length of term that's not going to suit the way we want to play moving forward. So I think it was more North Melbourne's decision to say, well, we're changing our plan.
But even that, I reckon, is odd. Like, you've put that deal on the table at the start of the year. Now, you've done a whole summer of training about with your squad about what you want and who you need, and that offer's still on the table. Then after a break, because of the virus, it's no longer there. Like, even that in itself, from a North Melbourne perspective, and what the hell were they doing at the start of the year?
Well, that's exactly right. And what I don't understand is that when Reece Shaw took over last year, he coached them for the second half of last year. North Melbourne were playing some good footy. They were playing some attractive footy. It was hard, uncompromising footy, but it was fast footy. And to be honest, a lot of the time it was winning footy. They won as many games as they lost. But during that time, with Reece Shaw as coach, Ben Brown kicked a 10. He kicked a 6. He kicked a 5. He kicked a lot of goals. He kicked a 4. He kicked a lot of goals under Reece Shaw as coach, playing a certain way. But North Melbourne, for whatever reason, have decided that they're going to play a territory game moving forward. Through 2020, post that break, and then again in 2021, 2022, and they go, well, if we're going to play that game, we don't need Ben Brown.
It's a most unusual situation. Someone's going to pick up a bargain for Ben Brown.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Well, I don't think it will be a bargain. I don't think it will be a bargain.
Well, but the problem with, it's not only North Melbourne who's lost leverage, Ben Brown's lost a fair bit of leverage too.
Well, not necessarily. I don't necessarily think that's the case, because all you need is two clubs that go, hang on a sec, look at these stats. We need Ben Brown. And then all of a sudden, if you've got three or four clubs, he'll get the the term of deal and the money that he's comfortable with. I think it's more about what North Melbourne has to give up, potentially. They might not have to give up anything. He could be walked through to the pre-season.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, Essendon or Hawthorn, who are down in the bottom five or six, who need a tall forward, potentially, particularly if Jay Danaher goes, they go, well, geez, we can just walk him through. Then North Melbourne won't get anything because he's not a free agent.
I'm still not convinced he'll get what he thought he might have been getting at the start of the year on the back of it. I think he's lost a lot of leverage.
Oh, no, I don't think he's going to get that sort of 800 number necessarily, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't get 3 or 4 year deal on 700 minimum.
We'll see.
Those goals don't lie, Daniel. Those goals don't lie.
I know that, Adam. I know that. I'm surprised as you. Don't worry. I'm perplexed. I'm almost flabbergasted, as Robbo might say, on 360. Juppie's in Bendigo. One of our favourites. So, Juppy, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel. Good morning, Adam.
What's doing? Just how's that regime
going? A phone call situation. This is new territory.
First time, long time. just wanted to follow up on that NBA bet from yesterday.
Yes.
So the original bet was $228,733.
How do you know this, Juppy, by the way?
Because that was put out by Tab Media.
Righto.
It wasn't me.
I was thinking it might have been you.
So the customer in question then cashed out for $97,624 when the Lakers were down by 10 at halftime.
Oh, he cashed out, so he's only lost 130.
Oh, not quite, Daniel. He's then taken a live bet of $97,624 on Denver minus 9.5 at $3.30. And they then lost by 8 points, including a layup when everyone else was shaking hands.
Oh, so, no. So it would have been 10. He would have got there.
Yes. So your terminology, Daniel, I believe that is vomiting on yourself.
That's vomiting all over yourself. That is vomiting all over yourself. What about that? He's had a mare. That punter has had an absolute mare. What about the layup shaking hand situation? That is an all-time low, Brian. Spot on. Oh, boy. Now, that's a setback, Juppy. That's a setback. Are you still running the regime?
I'm like our colleague there. I have wandered off that path.
Well, it's never too late to get back on the path, Juppy. We are fully supportive of your regime endeavours here on The Breakfast Club.
Difficult path. The only path I'm at the moment is directly to KFC.
Dirty bird action for Juppy. Thank you for the update on the story. Thank you for that. Oh, I've missed the second and third legs of that story.
Goodness now, mind. A text here says, on what planet does Hawthorn need a tall forward? Do you think Hawthorn needs... Because the difference between getting a tall forward or having a... or getting a good tall forward and having tall forwards. There's a difference between tall forwards and good tall forwards.
That is correct. Well, they need to work out what they're going to do with Mitch Lewis and Tim O'Brien. And if they see them as being players that they want to continue on with or keep developing as part of a developmental phase, then they won't go with Ben Brown, I wouldn't think. But John Patton hasn't played for a while, yeah. They will make some decisions. It depends. Yeah, Ben Brown's appealing to them if they've worked out that what they've got is not what they need.
Yeah.
I mean, because whoever says that off the SMS, that's a fair point. If you look at what they've got, Mitchell Lewis, Tim O'Brien, John Patton, and then Gunson's sort of your hybrid, maybe you don't need him. Is he steak or sizzle, Ben?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Right, I'll give you a chance to get through that. I'll give you a chance to decide that during the break, 28-7. And after this, we're going to touch base with Madison Lloyd, apprentice jockey, who had a big day yesterday at Flemington. And I do want to touch quickly on a number of people that decided that they would sit down and watch the cricket from Dubai or UAE, wherever it is, the IPL. The numbers are out, Whitey, and I know you're a numbers man. It's an interesting number. It's a very, very interesting number. There's a story out of it, too, that we need to touch base on from an Australian cricket perspective.
Yes, yes. Well. I want to talk about that, too, yes. To Peter from Geelong, we will get to your text after 7 o'clock. Peter from Geelong's got a very good point to make. But, yes, I do want to talk about that, that cricket situation as well. Might need a few chucks or some detergents.
Who?
Wow, the cricket fraternity.
Oh, okay, yes, okay, righto, yes, I see where you're going there. We'll do that, we'll get the chucks out, we'll get the GIF out as well, we'll just keep cleaning things here. 27-7, back
Mr.
with more
Shane.
After this. I want to talk to one of our guests on the line, a young woman going absolutely gangbusters in the world of racing, and she had a big day yesterday at Flemington.
Up the crown of the track, Belda, you're just in front of our Luca. They were followed by Ocular, and down the outside, Reward with Return. 250 metres to go. Jawwal just in front of Ocular, bursting through now. Yulong Storm and Reward with Return with Messerschmitt. Favourites being grabbed by Yulong Storm in the shadows. Yulong Storm coming clear, and Yulong Storm for Matty Lloyd won it from Jawwal.
That's how Matt Hill called it yesterday, race 5, Yulong Storm winning at headquarters, and Madison Lloyd, apprentice jockey, was on board, her first win at headquarters, they tell me. That's a good thing to be talking about on a Thursday morning. Maddie, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you feeling today after all the excitement of yesterday?
Oh, I'm feeling great. It's just such a great feeling. Doing it for Nathan, and he just gives me so much support.
Well, you've been in pretty hot form. We spoke to Hobbo, might have been last week or 2 weeks ago, as part of our early mail segment, and I've been watching his horses ever since, and he's getting a lot of winners, man, and you're riding a lot of those. How did that relationship get struck up?
So I had to do work experience, and my older sister was working on the ground for Nathan. So I come in, and I did a few weeks, and I never left.
So were you hoping that might be the plan when you first got there, or was it just a bit of suck and see?
I think I just wanted to be around the horses, and I just loved it so much I just couldn't leave.
Just loved it, you couldn't leave. And now you end up riding winners at Flemington. Tell us what's that's like, because you've ridden a lot of winners around the regional tracks, the tracks around the country, out of Burbs and in the bush, which is fantastic. But getting to headquarters and getting that first, the opportunity, and then first past the post, when you know you're going to win, Maddie, you know you've got the race licked, what's that adrenaline like?
It's something you can't really describe. It's just unbelievable. When I went past the post, no one was catching me even after the post, and I thought, what's going on? Where is everyone?
Did you think that this was the one that was going to be your winner at Flemington? Do you think Yulong Storm was going to be that horse for you yesterday?
Well, I never thought I'd actually get a sit on him, because Froggy, he goes exceptionally well for Froggy, and I was lucky enough that Froggy got suspended and I got to have a sit on him, and I knew he had run a really good race, but I thought Ocular would have him covered, but it didn't. Yesterday.
I'm really pleased that we can speak to you, Maddie, because every time I've got the races on in the car or at home, particularly at the moment, it's at home, I hear Maddie Lloyd, and straight away I think of Matthew Lloyd, Maddie Lloyd, and you would just hear the name all the time. Do you know how many winners you've actually ridden? Are you keeping count in recent times? Because you seem to have this amazing strike rate.
No, I don't really keep count. I just pick over and just hope for winners to come. But I seen yesterday that it was my 72nd winner, which was unbelievable.
72nd?
Yeah.
So did you? What would have you thought you had if you say you didn't? You don't count them. What were you thinking you were at?
Oh, I didn't think I was quite at 70 yet.
Yeah, that's a great effort. That's a great effort. Yeah. And how many times had you been to Flemington before yesterday's win?
I'd never been there to strap a horse or anything. I only went there to walk the track for apprentice school, and that's the only time I've ever been there.
Now, there's some people in the world that just make you sick. Brad Johnson's one of those. Not because of the fact he played 380 games and was a 15-time All-Australian, all that sort of stuff, and one of the great smiling faces on the planet. But he's down the line on Zoom today. He's got sun absolutely bursting through the window. So his world is magnificent. He's allowed to play golf. He's out cafeing and restauranting and winering with his family across the weekend because he lives outside of metropolitan Melbourne, and he just makes me sick. Good morning, Jono.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. Good morning, everyone. Yes, Half, it's meant to be pretty cold the next few days, but at the moment I'm sitting here and the sun is just beaming in. It's nice out in Geelong at the moment, I must admit. And moving here nearly 10 years ago is now a good decision with the things we can do at the minute. No, but look, not rubbing it in at all, because we understand that, you know, it has been tough this period of time, but hopefully we can all step out very shortly. And yeah, we had that luxury. My daughter was 18 on Tuesday, so we were able to sort of step out as a family and celebrate that with her rather than just doing it at home. So yeah, we've had those couple of luxuries present to us because of where we sit in terms of the virus at the moment.
You did a pretty good job of rubbing it in during the news, Brad.
You're the one who brought up the fact that I'm sitting here in sunshine.
I can't see you.
Between us now, it's public. Yes, I did rub it in a little bit because I do love my golf. I really do. And I love sort of just being able to get out and about as everyone does. So here we are now in Geelong. We're able to do that. So it's nice at the minute, Half.
Good for you. Good for you, John. I'm pleased for you and your people and your family and all that sort of stuff down there. Just don't mention it again.
No, I won't. That's it. I feel bad for doing it now, so that's it. Never again.
No, don't feel bad. Good luck to you. That's what we say around here. Now, listen, there's a fair bit happening in the world of footy, John, and it's a big night just before we get too deep into the proceedings and the topics for today. That big night for your footy channel, Fox Footy, tonight, because it's awards season.
Jam-packed, Half, as they say. It is jam-packed tonight with the All-Australian, the NAB Rising Star, the MVP, and the Coaches Award as well. So, yeah, you're right. It's going to be absolutely huge tonight on Fox. I think they've allocated an hour and a half. It might go for about 3.5, I think, with all of that. It's going to be great. It really is. And Sarah Jones will do a great job leading from the front, like she normally does throughout the throughout this time of year, all year in fact, but in particular the award seasons. So we'll all be involved in some way and helping present, you know, these big awards for the individual players from teams that have had great years. And that's what the bonus comes from. You have a good year in a team and you stand out, you get recognised for that. And tonight's an opportunity to recognise the best players in the competition.
As part of your six All-Australians, did you get six Blazers and where are they?
I've got six ashtrays, so that's what
it
was. A little it was sort of like a round sort of ashtray looking trophy, I suppose, right. Is what we used to get. We never got the Blazers. Maybe they go back now and fit us all out for Blazers, just so we're consistent with what the boys get. So I don't mind the Blazer. I think it looks pretty sharp for what they get. And so yeah, we got a trophy back in the day. So they sit in the house somewhere, Half. I'm not too sure. I've got too many things up and about now, Half. I used to just have it all, you know, decked out, big rooms and all that sort of stuff. You know, all my memorabilia up and couldn't go past without stepping into the room, you know, just to admire the work. But not anymore. I'm past that.
How many times did you play for Victoria, John? Are you?
I think it was three. So I was right at the tail end of it. Half and I were at the tail end of playing state footy. So we played in SA Half, I think it was. We had a big win over there against Adelaide. And then we had one game against the Allies and then one to finish at the MCG against South Australia. That was the final State of Origin game.
So for you, now, admittedly, it's different because you actually played as opposed to an All-Australian situation. But where does representing Victoria compared to being named as an All-Australian?
Oh, look, it was huge to be named and recognised. It comes back to, you know, the team's going really well. You're having an impact within that team and therefore you get sort of recognised from an All-Australian point of view. It's a fantastic honour. Representing your state, though, when we were coming through and Half and I played, you know, Till Cup together back in 1993, a long time ago,
but
we did, and we travelled through South Australia to do that, and to grow up to represent your state was the biggest thing. Like, that was the pinnacle. Like, we would rush home from school to watch Victoria play West Australia or South Australia. Like, that was the ultimate thing to be able to achieve. So then to represent Victoria was just a huge honour. So it probably sits, you know, above that. But then we got the opportunity to, with being named in the All-Australian team, to go and travel and play some international rules and play with the best players in the country, not just your state, but all around the country. And that was huge for our, for my football development. Half can talk on his own, but rooming with Mark Rusciuto, you know, in my first international rules tier or tour, or I roomed for Victoria. My first roommate was Gavin Brown. You know what I mean? So like, you learn so much from these guys, and you look at players today that had the opportunity last year. And Lockie Weller was one that, for me, that really stood up, I think, this year after being part of a state squad last year. Like, just to be around the best and learn from them. And you really do, you admire the older ones that, you, that you're with, like Robert Harvey and Steve Silvani and Craig Bradley. These guys that looked up to as a player, that you learnt so much from being around them in terms of their training habits and those sort of things. I remember Mark Rusciuto, guys, grabbed me the day we walked in. I was a bit nervous with the big fella. And he took his top off and he had the big tat in the back. And I was really nervous. He goes, "All right, Jono, we're going to do some weights." I went, "Yep, all right, Mark, we're going to do some weights." So, but they're the sort of guys that, they, you know, we just landed in Ireland and he was like, you know, super motivated to continue on and just be a better player. And you can see that from the way that they prepare and approach things. And, you know, you jump on board with these guys. They're certainly fantastic to be around.
See, I have a theory, and I talked about this with Half earlier, that if you're going to name an All-Australian team, they're not going to play. That's just the reality of the situation. Why wouldn't you name a State of Origin team each year in each state? And I reckon, particularly in these times, I'd take it a step further and say, okay, if you are named in the State of Origin team, then the team that you grew up playing for, so your junior club, gets a grant from the AFL to help, you know, potentially get them back on track after what we've gone through this year with no grassroots footy at all. So, you know, what was your junior footy team growing up?
Yeah, so Hoppers Crossing was my junior team. And I think the junior team, I don't know whether it still happens today. I think back in the past, if you played first game, 50 games, 100 games, something like that, maybe the junior club back in the day used to get a little kick for that sort of thing as a show of appreciation. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened. Not sure how it sits today, but I think that's a great idea, Whitey. And you know, you can really do some good community-based promotion around that. You know what I mean? The player, you get some good stories of the player going back to the club. We know how good, you know, that these stories are put together these days as well. So I think that's an excellent idea to give some money back that way. And you might even be able to put aspects back through certain charities as well in terms of, you know, the major ones within the States. EJ Witten Foundation comes to mind straight away with the big V aspect of things. So you could do certain things that I agree with, that we could still recognise the best players in the state at that period, and then whether they can hold on and become part of the All-Australian team at the end of the year, I think creates a really good talking point, because you'll have, you know, 20 guys from each state getting identified in their state team, and then of those, which ones go on, which ones fall away,
exactly.
which players weren't in that all of a sudden jump up to get in an All-Australian team. So you can create some really good discussion around those sort of teams as well. Although it would be virtually like we all are today, I think that's fine. I think it'd be a great talking point. As long as some aspect of it went back to the clubs, I think that's a great idea.
All right, so back to what will happen tonight. I'll ask both of you. Who wins the Rising Star? Or who should win it? Or I know Huff's not, and we're a bit the same, we don't really care, but who, as in debating it, but who do you think deserves it based on what's happened over the course of the season?
I think Caleb Sarong deserves to win the Rising Star. Watching him, I've probably seen him 10 or 12 times now this year, and he's been just absolutely sensational in terms of stepping into a young midfield at Fremantle, I should say, and really leading from the front in terms of that. His work around the ball is excellent. He links up really well. He gets back on the 45. His movement and positioning on the ground is absolutely first class. So, you know, the fact that himself, Brayshaw and Chera in some ways have really enabled that midfield at Fremantle to grow some depth this year, I think is really good, with Fife and Walters and Mundy, the superstars that can get it in and out of there and play a bit forward as well. But even at the end of the year, Michael Walters spent all his time forward because Longmuir was confident in what these younger guys were doing and trying to give them more opportunity as well as the season went on and fatigue started to set in. So Caleb Sarong, just in front of Noah Anderson, whose second half of the year has been very, very good. Statistically, he's been excellent. He's sort of, you know, starting to average around that sort of 18 to 22 possessions per week. You can see that he started to feel more comfortable in around the contest, accepting the hits, making the hits himself. So I think he'll probably, you know, flow in second, but I think it's Caleb Sarong.
Finals are different, but it counts for a little bit. Our guys will take a lot of confidence out of that performance. Wasn't too long ago. We played some really good footy, so no doubt the coaches will analyse that again and our players will be feeling really confident.
That is the voice of Matthew Scarlett, who's a legend of the Geelong Football Club these days, helping guide the next generation of Cats stars, talking about taking on the power again. Next Thursday night, the first game of the 2020 AFL Final Series, and it is, I'm sure, a time of the year that Harry Taylor's been looking forward to for some time. He's been a champ again this year for the Cats, down back, and now we get to the business end, an end he knows all too well. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Harry.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Great to have you with us. You've been so good for so long, the Cats, this year, that has there been a case of just waiting for this time to come, that you finally get the chance to make it all mean something?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I was looking back the other day, and I think my first run of the 2020 season was on about the 1st of October. So we're nearly going for 12 months without too many breaks. But in saying that, we had a lot to play for on the weekend. It's still, you know, the last few games are really important for us to get some things right and to sort of solidify our spot in the top four. So, yeah, it's not sort of a direct case of waiting. It's just a matter of trying to play well every single week.
And with the way you've played, I know it was a little bit tight on the weekend, but with the way you've played all through the year and been able to cope with anything that's been thrown at you, does that sort of stuff that gives you the confidence to go into a finals campaign thinking that you are ready?
Yeah, that certainly does help. So we've had some games this year where we've had to really fight back. Bulldogs one was a great example. We've had some games where we've started really well. Essendon brings to mind. So, yeah, all these sort of different scenarios that hopefully we've been able to put in the memory bank will help us during what's going to be a massive finals campaign.
Now, Harry, I've had the luxury of walking around town this week down in Geelong, mate, and everyone's asking me, how'd the legends pull up? Now, I'd love to say they were talking about you, Harry. You are a legend, but they were talking about Joel and Gary. How did the two superstars pull up after the game last week?
Yeah, I think they were pretty good. Gaz doesn't seem to ever get too sore, to be honest. He seems to be, you know, always the same. And Sel does probably look a little bit sore some days, but took a pretty big knock, I think, around his shoulder area and managed to get up and play out the rest of the game for us, which isn't unlike Sel to do. Yeah, went to recovery with both of them the other day and they look fine. We're fortunate to have a recovery centre up here we can use whenever we like. And obviously the beach is there as well. So, no great excuses not to be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And Harry, how do you think, I want you to sort of assess where you think the team is at, because it sort of feels like your best footy is maybe the best footy, and you seem to have all facets of the game covered. But then at times you get sort of in this trap of playing a slow brand of football. How would you assess where the team is at the moment going into a final series?
Yeah, I think we've got probably got some more tools this year than we probably had the last little while. When I say tools, I just mean we're probably a little bit more mature and we're able to actually change things when we need to a little bit easier. It's funny, the messaging from the coaches to the players on game day, you would think that's a really quick and easy process, but it isn't. It's a difficult one, and it does take a lot of practice and a lot of time. And hopefully over the last period of time, it's got in the other coaches. We've been able to slowly evolve and slowly get these things to happen more easily or more instinctively. So that's probably the one thing which is, I guess, a positive for us. But when we do play well, it obviously looks great, and we've had some really poor quarters as well. So trying to find the balance, trying to make sure that we're consistent in all of our effort and all of our preparation is something that I'm sure we'll be talking about this week.
And it does feel, Harry, that you've thickened that base of leaders around the footy team. And what I mean by that is, whether it be through management, giving guys rest or playing guys in different positions, the likes of Menegola, Guthrie, these types have become really good, dependable players for the team, which means that there's less pressure on your stars to perform every week.
Yeah, I guess that's part of what I'm talking about with the tools or the evolution of our team. We've just been able to potentially get a few other players in there. I know Joel sort of went to the wing a little bit last year, and Gaz probably played a bit more forward, so that's allowed other guys to get exposed to these situations I'm talking about where you need to act instinctively. You can't really spend too much time thinking exactly what you're going to be doing. It needs to be trained, practiced, and then on game day when time is of essence, you need to actually get it done.
And Harry, round 12, you took control of the Power. What was it that day? What pleased the footy club in terms of that win and over the Power, and in particular the role in stopping Charlie Dixon from doing any damage that day?
Yeah, we were happy with that performance. I think, to be honest, Port were probably a little bit flat. They looked a bit like us at the start of the game on different occasions when they just sort of really couldn't find their feet to get going. I dare say they'll be certainly up and about over in Adelaide next Thursday. But just really happy that we were able to control the game for long periods. That's one thing that I've noticed this year more than ever. It's just your ability to control the game, get it on your terms would be the footy vernacular that coaches and players would use. And then once you can do that, just trying to hold on for as long as you can. And with a shortened game, you probably don't need to hold on quite as long as you once did when you do have that momentum.
The Australian international season is going to be interesting because it follows the Australian domestic season to a degree as well. And I want to find out how Marcus Harris is going in his preparations for Victoria in the Shield under a new coach, of course. He's been good enough to join us, the opening batsman. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
How would you go knowing that there were 200 million people watching you perform, Marcus, if you knew that?
Well, they're not in the stadium, so it'd be all right, I reckon, but... I think that many people probably watch it anyway, just from what I could gather when we played against India last time, the amount of feedback you get. So, they obviously love their cricket, the Indian community, and I think it's great, like Whitey said, just to have some sport on the TV. It obviously shows that people are interested and wanted to watch it.
What ratio, Marcus, of the feedback would be positive versus negative just from those 200 million people that were watching you?
Probably 80-20 for negative.
Is that
right?
But
it's all pretty like it's. I think if you take it to heart, you're probably in the wrong case. But it's all pretty funny when you if you read through some of the stuff. It's pretty good.
So what happens in that situation, Marcus? Like if you get your Twitter account or whatever it is you've got, does your phone just start just pinging just non-stop, or how do you sort of combat that, or how do you embrace it, or do you just ignore it? What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, well, my the Instagram's the biggest one that gets bombarded by cricket's obviously so big in the subcontinent, so they love it. So I reckon even now, with not even playing, you still get like 50 or 60 people following you each day and messaging you and stuff like that. But I just turn off all the notifications so it doesn't light my phone up all the time. But I know it's happened a few times where they love messaging my partner Kat. I tagged a guy, Lockie, that makes the bat to Kookaburra and something the other day, and he said, "Oh, can you turn it off? I don't want all the people messaging me and stuff like that." So it's just little things like that that some people don't really like, but yeah, it's just part and parcel of it.
Right, that's an interesting insight into the world of the international cricketer. How's your pre-season been? How's your preparation been for the Shield, Marcus? So we've obviously got a new coach. I'm sure he's going gangbusters, Chris Rogers, but how have you found him and the start of the preparation?
Yeah, we've been pretty fortunate, actually, with the situation of everyone's in Victoria. It's been pretty crap, so we've been lucky to have exemptions the whole time since June. I think we probably had 3 or 4 days where we couldn't train, but we've made the most of what we could. We pretty much split the group in two groups of about 10 or 12 and went about trying to do it as normal a pre-season as we could. It obviously gets pretty tiresome when all you do is go into the ground and, have a hit or do some gym and run and then go home, but it's better than sitting at home, so... normally you'd have a camp or a away trip, something to look forward to through the pre-season, which we haven't had. But credit to our coaches and staff at Cricket Victoria, we've been able to train. So it's been good. And, yeah, like you said, Bucky only came in 2 weeks ago, but it's been good to finally have, you know, a head coach. And luckily enough, with having the Junction Oval, we had a few centre wickets last week and we got another 3-day game next week before we head off.
Right. So are you working with Buck? I mean, I've left-hand opening batsman, pretty handy player, and sort of blossomed in the back end of his career too. You're a bit earlier than that. You're a bit more precocious than that. But how much time are you spending with him trying to tap into his experience and his value to you as a batsman?
Yeah, I spent a bit of time with him. Bucky was coached a few of the Aussie A games last year, so I had spent a bit of time with him. So I've hit a few balls with him since he's come in. I've hit a few balls with Andre Borovic as well, who's one of our assistant coaches. So I'm just happy to have someone wang some balls at me. And I had the discussion with Buck when he came in. I sort of said, I'm happy to take feedback on board and whatever you think might help me. I'm happy to, you know, at least have a crack at see if it works or not. But and he understands, you know, people don't want to make huge changes close to the season. But I think if he can make a few little tweaks here and there, it can be good.
So I've got two questions about that. Firstly, you've had so much sort of additional time in the nets because, as you said, of the circumstances. Have you tried to change anything technically? Have you sort of tinkered at all, or have you tried to stay true with what you've had the whole way through?
Pretty similar, Whitey. I just tried to. I've sort of felt like the last 18 months that my backlift hasn't been as straight as what I'd like it. So I've just tried to straighten that up a little bit and just get my alignment a bit better. I felt like in England that was one of the things that I struggled with a little bit in the test series. So it was sort of hard coming out of that test series back into the home summer straight away. Well, this time 12 months ago, you don't really get any time to work on it. So you sort of try and do a little bit on the run when you're playing, but there's not too much you can do. So that's what's been good about having this time now, just pretty much 6 months at home, is just you can tweak a few little things and you've got plenty of time to sort of try and get it to work. So that's what's been good. So it's always, the thing is, it's always, things can be work well in nets, but it's actually a matter of being able to do it in the middle. So that's what's been good, to be able to have these centre wickets and a 3-day game coming up next week.
Yeah, because I think the other part of the question I had for you is, it's interesting with Andrew McDonald as coach, he kind of let you do your thing and backed you in, and sort of that uncomplicated approach kind of worked for you. He really backed you in to play on instinct. Chris is more the sort of the master technician and all that sort of thing. Have you had a chat to him about what he expects from you or what the specific role that he will have with you is, or will that just evolve naturally over time? Because obviously he does know your game.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. We've had the discussion, and I think it's one of those things that evolve naturally. I think I really thrived in the environment that Ronnie created. But in the same breath, I would ask Ronnie or Lockie for advice as well. So I said to Buck, I'm happy to take on advice, but I sort of want it to be a thing that's naturally done, not sort of a forced thing. So that's what's been really good. I've been happy to go up to Buck and ask for some advice, and we've been working on some stuff, which has been really good. So I know sometimes there's coaches that come in, they're like a bull in a china shop, and they try to change everything for everyone. It can be really unsettling, but Buck's been good so far. So, yeah, it's sort of a bit of a mixture of the both. I like being pretty uncomplicated, but then when there's areas to work on, it's good to be able to work on that as well.
You talk about the different atmosphere. It can be a bit of a blow up when someone comes in all guns blazing. But when you lose so much experience too, you've got lost a few key players, some veterans of the team are now no longer part of the squad. How does that affect the dynamic of the group?
Well, it's definitely younger. I think we're outnumbered now. So I think so. Obviously, to lose Sid and Trem is going to be a big. I'm not sure. I think you can call it a hole in our team. They're obviously our two most experienced bowlers and probably the two, obviously with Scotty Boland and Johnny Holland, but the two, you know, mainstays of the side for the last few years. So it's going to be a challenge, but with that challenge, it's going to come a great opportunity for a couple of young blokes. I know Will Sutherland's done really well over the last sort of 18 months, and I feel like he'll continue to grow. But there's going to be a great opportunity there for another seamer, you know, to get a crack. So it's going to be interesting to see how we go. I know, you know, going to Adelaide, and we're pretty much playing, I think our first game might be a couple of days out of being locked in a hotel room for 2 weeks. That'll be interesting to see how that goes. But there's going to be opportunities for guys this season, which is good. And I think the core of our top six and seven is probably going to be pretty similar to what it's been. So that's probably going to be, we're going to have to pull a bit of weight to understand that, you know, if there's some young blokes coming inside, it's not an easy game to work out straight away. But I think our batting is going to be pretty strong.
Time for us to do a bit of a summary of the Melbourne Rebels Super Rugby season. We haven't chatted to the coach for a while. He's been up at Terrigal in New South Wales getting the boys through, and their season is finished after a preliminary final loss to the Queensland Reds, who went on to lose to the Brumbies in the final. But we've tracked him down. The coach of the Rebels, Dave Vessels, joins us again. Good morning, coach.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you on the program. Firstly, how nice is it to be home?
Yeah, I had to reintroduce myself to the kids again, which was interesting. but away for a long time. You know, we were away since June, so it was a pretty long stint away. But very nice to be home.
How do you sum up the Rebels season? Obviously, an abbreviated season, different format with just the Australian conference as opposed to the 15 sides we've had through the three conferences in the last couple of years. What do you say when people ask you, what did you think of your year?
Oh, I mean, I think the first thing is just that the comp itself just got better and better. You know, obviously there's been some challenges with Super Rugby over the last couple of years. I reckon, you know, a domestic competition has really highlighted a way forward, I reckon, for Australian rugby just in general. I thought people really got behind the comp as the games went. I think our semi-final had the biggest crowd that a sporting game has had in Australia since COVID hit, you know. So, I thought that was really positive. We did some really good things. I think the really pleasing thing for our team is that we improved as the competition went on. We had some real adversity this year. Obviously, every game for us was away. We were the only team, as well as the force, that were on the road. So we didn't have any home games, and we ended up winning sort of more away games than any of those other teams combined. So from that point of view, it was, you know, really pleasing. But I guess ultimately, you know, we're in it to try to win, and we fell just short. You know, we had our opportunities in that semi-final against the Reds, and we didn't take them. And, you know, we've got to think long and hard about why that happened and make sure that if we get the opportunity again next year, when we get the opportunity next year, that we finish those moments, you know.
How much of it is a significant step forward, Dave? Obviously, the Rebels have been thereabouts now for quite a while. Obviously, a reduced amount of teams and all that sort of thing. But did you feel there were significant steps forward?
Yeah, I think massive steps forward, and probably on a number of fronts. I mean, I think probably the most significant one is that we debuted 19 players since the start of the year. You know, and that's a really big number. I mean, that's almost a whole new team. And many of those players are young Victorian players. We've got guys like Pone Famasili, Trevor Hosea, Jordi Ulisi. These sort of guys that have come through our development pathways and are now actually all of those three in the Wallaby squad. And because it's such a young team, I really think that if we can get things right over the next couple of years, you know, we can have quite a period of success. But obviously, between where we are now and achieving that, there's a lot of hard work to be done. But we transitioned a lot of older players out of the group and replaced them with a lot of exciting young talent. And I think that's, you know, I think everyone in Melbourne's pretty excited about that.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about those young guys in particular. I think there's nine Rebels in the Wallaby squad with the train-ons added. So that's a huge performance. And the transition from an experienced group to an inexperienced but energetic and exciting group must really get you as a coach up and about too. Even though the season's over, and you have to wait till next year to work with them again effectively, it must give you something to look forward to yourself.
I think one of the things that happens in rugby, probably that doesn't happen in some of the other bigger codes, is we get global pressure for our players. So, you know, yep. The guys are offered a lot of money to go to Japan or to Europe or things like that. And so we've battled over, not only us, I think all of the franchises have battled to keep a consistency of our playing group. And I think what we have now is a bunch of young players that have, in general committed for the next couple of years. And so what we get the opportunity to do is really build some consistency in the list and then hopefully through that in the performances. You know, I don't think there's any luck in the fact that the two teams that ultimately made the final are the teams that had the most consistency in their list over the last sort of 2 years, you know, and they're going to now come under the same pressures that we've already come under over the previous year or two, you know. So there's this constant sort of fight to keep our talent in Australia. But of course, the more you win and the more successful you are, the easier that becomes, you know. So that's the challenge for us from a coaching point of view.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.